From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, host of this edition of PC USA. March is the month that the international community recognizes and honors women by celebrating Women's History Month and International Women's Day. Women around the world are making their mark on the global landscape by overcoming challenges, accomplishing their goals, and by changing the way roles are defined. As much as the accomplishments of women are celebrated, women generally continue to struggle in all aspects of life. A recent report by the United Nations pointed out that 60% of women around the world earn less, save less, and are at risk of falling into poverty. The report also notes that women earn 23% less than men worldwide. A recent Pew Research study found that in many countries, women place more importance on gender equality than men do. However, women are less optimistic than men that women in their countries will achieve equality in the future, and they are more likely to say men have better lives than women. The survey also said that most women agree it is important for women to have the same rights as men in their country. Across the 34 countries surveyed, a median of 94% hold this view, including nearly all in Sweden, the Netherlands, France, the U.S., Canada, Germany, Greece, Spain, Australia, Argentina, the U.K., and Hungary. In the U.S., 75% believe gender equality is likely. An additional 14% volunteer the response that women already have the same rights as men. Despite these disparities, there are countless women around the world who are fighting to make change and lay the groundwork for a brighter future. And I would add, during this challenging time of a pandemic. I will mention a few recent notables. Just recently, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala made history by becoming the World Trade Organization's first African and female leader. The former Nigerian finance and foreign minister told NPR that she looks forward to getting the global economy going again. Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand, has been praised for her response and swift steps to minimize the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. NBC News reports that Ardern, 40, stands almost alone as having all but eradicated community transmission of COVID-19. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is the United States' first female vice president, the highest-ranking female official in U.S. history, and the first African-American and Asian-American vice president. Other recent historic notables are President Biden's cabinet picks, Linda Thomas-Greenfield as the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and Janet Yellen, former Federal Reserve chair, to serve as his first Treasury secretary. Well, joining me to discuss the present state and future of gender equality and gender parity is former U.S. ambassador to Malta, Gina Abercrombie Winstanley. She has a vast bio, and among her number of career accomplishments, her Middle East assignments have included election monitoring in the Gaza Strip and an extraordinary assignment where she actively supported gender equality in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as the first woman to lead a diplomatic mission there. She was a fellow on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for the then-ranking member, Senator Joseph Biden. She is also the recipient of the Maltese Order of Merit, Department of State Meritorious and Superior Honor Awards, including for acts of courage during an attack on the U.S. Consulate General Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, on December 6, 2004. By Al-Qaeda terrorist. And also joining me is my colleague, VOA's senior White House correspondent, Patsy Wittes-Kuzwara, who brings over 25 years of broadcast experience at leading radio and TV stations in Indonesia, the UK, and the US. Well, thank you both ladies for joining me today. Now, going back to the list of names of women in high-level positions, Ambassador, can we say that some headway is being made in terms of seeing more women in decision-making positions than ever before? And really, what does that say about gender parity?
Yes, we can say it. In fact, of the 15 cabinet-level positions that are in line for the presidency, nearly half are held by women, including women of color at this time. And of the senior level positions in the White House and throughout the interagency, about 60% are held by women in this administration already. So there's certainly some significant progress that has been made at the senior levels. I believe what we can say about this is that the president has begun as he means to go on. He, as president, as candidate, and the Biden-Harris administration made very clear, even before the election, that they intended to have a government and administration that looks like America. And the steps that have been taken thus far show that that is the direction that they intend to go. And of course, America, particularly America's women of all backgrounds, are watching to see and certainly willing to hold accountable that he and the vice president follow through.
If I may add, Kim, because what the ambassador has said right now just really is very resonant to me as well as a first-generation immigrant woman myself. So while I was covering the nominations of President Biden's cabinet, I was really struck by this recurring theme of not just women, but also daughters of immigrants, descendants of the enslaved. That was really highlighted by the administration and also by the nominees. We also too mentioned people like, for example, Katherine Tai, who is set to be confirmed as the United States Trade Representative, whose parents are from Taiwan. And I remember when I was covering her nomination, she described how she and an Indian female colleague were in Geneva to present a case to sue China before the World Trade Organization. And she described how her heart swelled with pride as two daughters of immigrants there to fight for and to reflect the nation that had opened doors of hope and opportunity for their families. So that was a moment that really stuck in my head as I covered the Biden administration nominations of not just women, but also women of color and daughters of immigrants.
In fact, it's 20% who are first generation
That's right.
Immigrants.
Yeah. That's right.
Thank you, Patsy. And speaking of President Joe Biden, I wanted to talk about two of his executive orders, establishing a gender policy council and overhauling controversial Title IX provisions that were under the Trump administration. So what do these initiatives signify in addressing gender inequality and sexual violence?
There, unfortunately, is an enormous amount of work to do on this subject. One of the things the Policy Council will be looking at are the impacts, the disproportionate impacts on women and women of color in particular. We've certainly seen from the pandemic, whether it's those who are affected because of illness, those who are affected because of job loss, those who are affected because of the challenge of getting access to the vaccines. From the beginning all the way through, there have been disproportionate challenges for women and women of color. And the administration knew it before coming into office. It was something that the campaign tracked closely and worked very hard to put together strategies for addressing it at the earliest possible moment, and is giving focus to now that they are in office. These disproportionate impacts have got to be addressed. And as you see, there have been announcements from the administration about setting up sites of working with state and local authorities to get vaccines out, to address the health disparities, et cetera. And that's just one aspect. And all the things that are brought to bear, really having a hard light shined on them as a result of the pandemic, were already in place with other situations with regard to health or employment, or indeed, as you mentioned in your open, the amount of salaries that people take home for doing the same work. So this administration is well aware, as you know, with having a vice president as a woman, she can speak to it from personal experience. And as we bring women to our rightful place, which is full partners, half of those who are directing what the government does and how it gets after the challenges facing the American people, but bringing in our personal experience and expertise and perspectives to have effective remediation for these things, I believe we are going to have a much higher level of success.
And if I may add, Kim, also, I believe this is where the experiences of not just women, but also women in color in all stages of leadership really matters, particularly in the pandemic, right? I mean, we've seen these women mayors of Washington, D.C., for example, Muriel Bowser is African-American, Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago. As mayors of these cities, they know exactly what their communities need. And very often, those communities of color, as well as women in those communities, are the ones who need the most help. And having these women in positions of leadership is very important, as we can see from the lessons that we've learned from the crisis.
Yes, excellent. Thanks, Patsy. And also, in talking about just, you know, women during this pandemic, how can President Biden expand access to high quality, affordable health care for all women?
Well, there's the challenge for America. Certainly, his stated willingness to give attention to the issue, something that was put by the wayside in the previous administration, of providing access to health care, again, is a priority for our federal government. But the challenges to get this access are not just a federal problem, it is a state and local problem as well. Where hospitals are located, where doctors and nurses go to serve, education, access to tuition assistance. As you know, there is discussion about trying to make community colleges free so that people can have access to the education that is needed to provide health care. So all of these things are being looked at now with a hard and intentional eye. It is early days yet. I think he has made very clear that he wants a full cooperation and partnership with the American people. You can see by the appointments made, as Patsy noted, from all walks of life, that he wants perspectives and knowledge of all of America to inform how we get after these issues. And I think that's how we're going to come to success.
Patsy, you'd like to jump in?
Yeah, if I may add just one thing there, I think what's really important is also on the fight to have paid maternity leave, which, you know, this may be surprising for our audience, for our international audience to hear, but the U.S. does not have guaranteed paid maternity leave, unlike most developed or industrialized countries. And I think that's one of the things that can be like the big equalizer, right, in terms of women's advancements in their career and so on. I mean, I remembered when I had my child, I could not take any paid maternity leave. And so basically what I had to do was just combine all my leaves, all my sick leave, all my annual leave, and then some unpaid leave. And most women in the workplace in the U.S. have to do this. They have to cobble together because nothing is guaranteed for them. So I think that's one of the things that the administration is also looking at in terms of trying to make this better for American women.
Yeah, and Patsy, I would say parental leave, not just maternity leave.
Right, that's right.
It's a painful memory, but I remember I was posted overseas when my daughter is adopted, and I was taking time off to bond and take care of her. She was 7 days old when we were told that we were getting another child. And my boss asking me if I was going to come to work to do the work of a diplomat, or was I going to stay home? And I kid you not, play mommy. Oh. And even though it was, you know, an outrageous statement in and of itself, if I had known better or been brave enough, I might have, you know, raised it further to try and say this was a discriminatory statement, because I felt the pressure to go back to work, and I did not take my full, and it wasn't maternity leave or paternity leave, it was family leave, which you can use for sick leave or to take care of a newborn. It was only 3 weeks. And even so, I did not feel I could take that full 3 weeks to bond with my new daughter, because my boss was being very derisive about me taking that time. I think there are very few people who would say that these days, but I am not at all certain it wouldn't be said or communicated. And therefore, it's got to be parental leave so that men and women have equal access to it, and the burden and the penalty, because let's be frank, many women find it a penalty to step out of the workforce and thereby lose that momentum that we're gaining in our younger years, and then coming back and having to compete with peers who remained in the workforce, who built up more of a track record of what they were doing, and therefore feeling left behind. So if it's parental leave, everybody has access to it. That's going to level the playing field in a way that simply providing maternity leave will not.
That's the other thing. I mean, there's so much that the U.S. needs to do just in terms of legislations, in terms of making sure that women have equal rights. I mean, if we think about it, the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution, this is decades-old amendment, is still having trouble being ratified, you know, because the last state that ratified it, the 38th state, was Virginia in 2020. And then the Attorney General, William Barr, basically said, well, it's past its statute of limitations. There's still all these legislative problems, as well as cultural problems, as well as career problems that's just compounded for women, working women, particularly in the U.S. I do say that we do have it better than some countries in the world, but we're certainly not on top of the pack. In fact, the United States is quite behind in terms of gender parity. There is this index called the Global Gender Gap Index, and it measures all different factors of parity between the sexes. And the United States is actually ranked 53 globally. And that is, you know, obviously not a good position to be compared specifically to other developed and industrialized nations. So as we know, like, the top ones have always been the Scandinavian countries, you know, Iceland's number one, Norway, Finland, Sweden, and so on. But the United States still has a lot to catch up.
Yeah. One of the challenges in the United States is that even as women, we don't understand that we are not yet fully equal under the law. I have to say, in spite of my education, my background, my experiences, my international travel, even I did not realize that until just a few years ago when I saw a documentary called Equal Means Equal. And in it, there is an interview with Justice Antonin Scalia. And he notes that while the Constitution does not prohibit the equal treatment of women, it does not demand it. And until we get the Equal Rights Amendment passed, we are going to continue to face those challenges.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Gina Abercrombie-Winstanley, former U.S. Ambassador to Malta. Also joining me on the panel is my colleague, Patsy Wittes-Kuzwara, VOA Senior White House Correspondent. I'm Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. If you would like to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Now back to our program. So I wanted to go talk about just a little bit about the work you were doing in Saudi Arabia and just looking at the Biden administration and how can his administration protect and help empower women in countries such as Saudi Arabia?
Well, one of the things we have to do is lead by example. One of my favorite things to say while I was in Saudi Arabia and other countries around the world is that you can hardly be expected to reach your full potential as a nation if you are only tapping talent of half the nation. That's just common sense. And we have to recognize that in the United States as well. So there are too many areas where women are not full partners, are not close to or more than 50% in leadership positions. And across the board, whether it's law, whether it's banking, whether it's medicine, whether it's education, and I'm talking at the senior levels, those who are making the policy to have a positive impact on the American people, on our men and women, on our families, on our children, on our future. We need more women across the board. So we have to lead by example. And that while we call for laws to outlaw, to protect women abroad, that our laws are not fully in place in the United States. I have spent a career speaking out against the incidence of child marriage around the world that is so detrimental to the health, to the progress, to the economic well-being of women and girls and therefore families. It has a detrimental impact on men as well. And yet, in the United States, there are many states where child marriage is legal, even in our own country. So we are out advocating for women around the world while women and girls are not fully protected in our own country. So we've got work to do at home.
Ambassador, if I may just add a follow-up to your statement, beyond setting an example, do you also think that policies from different administrations have different impacts in terms of women's rights, for example, women's access to reproductive rights, right? I mean, you know, yes. President Joe Biden, one of the executive order that he signed in January expanded access to reproductive health around mm-hmm. the world, including by rescinding the Mexico City mm-hmm. policy, also known as the global gag rule. In your experience as a diplomat, this is a policy that's controversial in the U.S. because it relates to abortion, but to the rest of the world, it also impacts other women's health services, not just abortions, obviously access to reproductive health, and so on. In your experience as a diplomat, going from one administration to another, a Republican administration goes one way, and then a Democratic administration goes the other way. How does that impact both diplomats and staff, as well as their partnerships on the ground, and women around the world who are directly impacted by these differences in policy or in emphasis between administrations?
It's a challenge, as you can imagine, although certainly we generally understand that if a Democratic administration is coming in, that it's going to go in the way that President Biden has gone. And if a Republican administration comes in, it's going to go the opposite way. So we can certainly anticipate, as of the day after election, what changes are coming. It is unfortunate. It breaks the momentum. We certainly know, based on the science and experience, that the support for health rights is important and has an economic impact and a impact on the improvement and economic general well-being of a nation. So we know this. So many diplomats, and certainly those working in development, are always regretful of the changes that have in recent years happened under Republican administrations. You know, everyone has their personal views, and, you know, based on religion, based on their own counsel, and everyone is entitled to that. I think most of us can take on the mantle of being pro-life, absolutely pro-life. But life is not simply giving birth. Life continues. And the safety and health and well-being of children, of those who are here, of their ability to lead happy and productive lives, to be well-educated, to be productive human beings, all of that is life as well. And so we can't stop it at just one small segment of 9 months. It continues for the full lifespan. And as soon as we grasp pro-life in the holistic way that we should be thinking about it, in my view, then we can come together, I think, and make choices that are going to last and be sustained regardless of administration, taking politics out of it, but thinking about it in a holistic way. So I believe all of us can be pro-life and pro-choice at the same time. We are not stopping at one segment, but thinking about children into adulthood pro-life.
Ambassador, I wanted to talk a little bit about your field of cybersecurity. The race to even up the gender disparity in many industries is steadily gathering steam, and cybersecurity, a field that you have worked in and have been successful in, it's widely perceived as being a progressive and forward-thinking industry. Well, the fact of the matter is that to a large extent, it still remains a male-dominated profession. Where does it stand in terms of gender parity?
It has fallen back in recent years. It started off a far more balance with regard to men and women in the field, if not heavily weighted by women in the field. I mean, when you think about the movie Hidden Figures, which did a wonderful job of showing not only women of color, but women who are of European extract as well. So both, and they were called ciphers at the time. Before we even had computers, women were doing the work for the calculations in that field. And then women were the early trailblazers in that field. There are a number of women who were lions in the field early. early on. At the National Security Agency, there was a woman, Grace Lee Hopper, who was a leader in the field. She's got rooms named after her. Mata Hari is another woman who was a leader in the field, and there are others. And so we went from having women, if not dominating the field, certainly full partners in the strides in the early part of the industry, and then for whatever reasons, slowly backing off. And I don't know if, as you know, my generation, women were not expected to do well or have an interest in math and science. And so it became unfashionable for women to, or girls and women to excel in these fields. It was not feminine, not ladylike, but increasingly we are trying to, I don't want to have to say claw back, but that might be the right term, our presence, our part of the field, because we have much to contribute. And not only in the hard parts of it, but also in the ethical discussions, not just can you do something, but should you do something? And we are all suffering from some of the decisions that have been made when it comes to privacy, when it comes to what algorithms can do and how they are used. And having more women in these discussions, I believe, will balance out those discussions. You know, when you're thinking about what does this mean for people's engagement, whether it's in cyber, whether it's, you know, in different aspects of the internet. So we are clawing back our position of parity, but it's hard because, as you've pointed out, it's very male dominated. It's very European male and Asian male dominated. And we need a broader spectrum of voices. We absolutely do.
We're getting close to wrapping up. And I just really wanted to look at, Ambassador, how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting gender equality and women's rights generally.
It's having many unintended costs. I mentioned earlier that women, because we tend to be in service industries, in healthcare, so we're frontline workers, whether that is as nurses' aides in nursing homes where there were so many deaths, or working in hospitals, or working in other service industries, you know, bus drivers. There are plenty of women out there who are on the front lines and therefore on the front lines of exposure and illness. Then, of course, when they shut schools then and children were at home, women took an imbalanced brunt of having to care for the family who were suddenly at home. Everybody knows you can't sit a child in front of a computer screen and expect, you know, full concentration without supervision, and certainly follow up with questions and homework and all the rest of it. And women have fallen back to take care of that responsibility as well. So even if they could remain in the workforce, they were doing double duty. They are doing, because it's not that it's over. I was on a call with some women in foreign policy day before yesterday, and the first 20 minutes of the call were women talking about strategies for Zoom learning for the children, you know, remote learning. And it is a horrific burden to try and do that. So many women have had to step out of the workforce altogether just to take care of their families. And there have been a number of articles about that in the last few weeks, you know, noting this hidden cost, this hidden economic cost, professional cost, mental health cost. You know, I tell people, I went to work for the good of my family, not only for helping to support it, but so that I could be mentally and emotionally healthy. That my happy children require a happy mother, and a happy mother required working. So all of that, that extra burden of trying to juggle all of these things. Elder care is also out there for families who didn't want to send their parents to nursing homes, or if they had children with developmental problems who were in particular schools. Suddenly, all of that falls on families, and that means it falls on women. Mm-hmm. So we have borne the cost, the burden, in a horrifically disproportionate fashion. And, you know, the administration is looking at that. It's going to take a village across the federal, state, local, private, to try and retrieve so many things that have been lost for women, and therefore a loss for the nation. Again, around the world, this is a challenge. When people are locked away, you know, you can't get to work, you can't get to school, you can't get out of the house, neither can your abuser. It is a disastrous package.
We're going to have to end on that note. This is a fascinating topic, and I do wish we could go on, but we will end the show at this point. And I want to thank my distinguished guest, Gina Abercrombie Winstanley, former U.S. Ambassador to Malta, and my colleague, VOA Senior White House Correspondent Patsy Wittes-Kuzwara. Thank you both for a very enlightening show. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Pikesville, Maryland. I'm Kim Lewis. Be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.